This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The collision between extreme Islam and Western secular culture is the larger story in the new book Murder in Amsterdam, The Death of Theo van Gogh and the Limits of Tolerance. It investigates the murder of the Dutch filmmaker and columnist Theo van Gogh, the great-grandnephew of Vincent. He was killed in 2004 by a 26-year-old Moroccan Dutchman named Mohamed Bouyeri, who thought Van Gogh's short film Submission was an insult to the Prophet Muhammad. The film was written by Ayan Hirsi Ali, a Muslim Somali woman from a highly educated background who, after moving to the Netherlands, had become an atheist and a member of the Dutch Parliament. After Van Gogh's murder, she went into hiding. My guest Ian Baruma is the author of Murder in Amsterdam. He was born in Holland in 1951 and lived there until 1975. He's now a professor at Bard College. He writes frequently for the New York Review of Books and The New Yorker. Ian Baruma, welcome back to Fresh Air. Let me ask you to begin by describing the murder.
It happened on a fairly early morning when commuters were going to their work on bicycles, including Theo van Gogh himself. And it was a fairly busy street with a lot of traffic and a lot of cyclists. And Mohamed Bouyeri, the killer, gunned him down from his bike. And Van Gogh sort of crawled to the other end of the street begging for mercy. And he had his throat cut. And a note or a sheaf of notes was pinned onto his chest with another knife with a lot of death threats to various figures in public life in Holland, including another character in the story, a main character in the story, Ayan Hirsi Ali.
What else did the notes that were pinned to his chest say?
Well, they were really the expressions. They were mostly in Dutch, although a lot was translated from the English translations of Arabic, probably got that the killer got from the internet, from various Muslim websites, or very radical Muslim websites, I should say. And a lot of it was threatening doom and death to the West, to the United States, to Holland, and to various figures. There was also a lot of stuff about a Jewish cabal running the Netherlands, with the names of various politicians mentioned, many of whom weren't Jewish at all, even though that doesn't really matter all that much in this paranoid universe. And the mayor of Amsterdam, who is an assimilated Jew, Job Cohen, who plays a fairly major part in all this story as well.
Now, the killer, Mohamed Bouyeri, objected to, among other things, a film that Theo van Gogh had directed with the screenplay by Ayan Hirsi Ali. What did Bouyeri find so objectionable about this movie?
Well, it was very much Ayan Hirsi Ali's film. Theo van Gogh, who was a film director professionally, helped her out on technical things, but it was very much her story. And she tried to provoke discussion on the plight of women in Islam, and women who are abused by men, by husbands, brothers, fathers, and so on. And in her view, it's the Quran itself that allows men to abuse women in this manner. And the most provocative thing is that texts from the Quran, which are specifically about the treatment of women, were projected onto the naked body of a praying, veiled woman. And this was seen as an insult to the Prophet and blasphemy.
Now, a few months before Bouyeri killed Van Gogh, he'd been convicted of slashing a policeman's neck with a knife, for which he got a 12-week sentence, which seems like a very lenient sentence for attacking a policeman.
Yes. I mean, Holland is not does not have a very punitive system. He had been known for outbursts of violence, for having a violent temper. Incident with the policeman wasn't the first time he'd got into trouble. Although, on the whole, apparently a rather quiet, bookish person, he did have these tantrums. So the police did have their eye on him, But apparently the Dutch security people, the sort of intelligence people, did not regard him as a serious threat. They saw him as a sort of fringe figure, but not as a hardcore radical.
You've subtitled your book, The Death of Theo van Gogh and the Limits of Tolerance. In what way do you think this story is about the limits of tolerance?
Well, it's about the limits of tolerance in the sense that Theo van Gogh himself thought that in liberal Dutch society, one should be able to say anything, no matter how offensive. And he was personally, one of his missions in life seems to have been to push that as far as he could possibly go. What made this murder so unusual and so unusually shocking to many people in Holland is that it was really the first time that somebody had been killed purely for voicing particular opinions. Offensive though those opinions may be, these things did not normally lead to murder in the Netherlands. And so it shows that there are limits and that not everything can be said without facing very dire consequences.
I think the way I interpret it, tolerance had a kind of double meaning in that title too. It was the limits of the Dutch people for tolerating extremism in immigrant communities, like what would be acceptable. There's a big debate in the Netherlands now about multiculturalism.
Yes, I don't think it's necessarily wrong if people are intolerant of extremism. I think we should be intolerant of extremism. The problem is how you analyze the roots of the extremism. And if the analysis is that Islam itself somehow poses a danger, and that if we don't stop people from speaking non-European languages in mosques or that kind of thing, that somehow then society will be dangerously threatened. I myself don't believe this is the case. I think we should be flexible and we should be tolerant of people speaking different languages, having different beliefs and so on. Where you draw the line is at violence. And any group, Muslim or not, that uses violence to push its ends should not be tolerated. The problem is that there is a wider intolerance that's come up perhaps in the wake of the murder of Theo van Gogh.
Well, Rita Verdonk, who's the Minister of Immigration in the Netherlands, has had some very controversial policies on immigration. For instance, she thinks that only Dutch should be spoken in the streets.
Yes, this was a suggestion she made. I mean, a lot of these suggestions have been treated with ridicule, as they should be. The idea that people should be forced to speak Dutch in the streets is, of course, an absurdity. There is something to be said for the argument that more should be done to make sure everybody speaks the national language, in this case Dutch. But to force people to speak a language in public, especially in the streets, is unenforceable, intolerant, and absurd to my mind.
The Netherlands has always had a reputation as being a very tolerant country. Tolerance is in the subtitle of your book. Do you think that Rita Verdonk's controversial views and policies, is this a backlash against Muslim immigration in the Netherlands?
I think it's a slightly panicky reaction to what was complacency and indifference. Tolerance can come in many forms. And I think the prevailing form of tolerance in Holland, as is true in Britain, is indifference. It's live and let live. You let people live in their neighborhoods and among their own kind, and you don't bother them, and you don't want them to bother you, and you don't really, you pretend that there is no real problem, and you look away, and you pretend that you're living in the most marvelous, tolerant, multicultural, liberal society in the world. Then when extremism occurs and you have a spectacular murder, suddenly there is a panic in some quarters and people feel that everything has failed and everything has to be suddenly tightened up and done differently and it's all a disaster and so on. And I think this panic reaction is in many ways, if you like, the flip side of complacency.
You know, we haven't talked much about Theo van Gogh himself, the person who was actually murdered by Mohamed Bouyeri. Tell us a little bit about his work and his place in the Dutch art world.
He was a fascinating figure. He grew up in a very prosperous family, related to the great painter, and in a leafy suburb of The Hague, and was always an enfant terrible. He always wanted to shock in one way or another and provoke in his films as well as in his columns. And in the end, he probably became more famous for his columns and his outspoken opinions than he did for his films. He was rather too hasty in his work as a filmmaker ever to make a film that was totally satisfactory. He made quite good films, but not more than that. But it was as a provocateur, as somebody who, a master of abuse, that he really became well known.
What do you mean by a master of abuse?
In that his columns were not just critical of other people, they were tirades. And there is a kind of tradition for this in Dutch letters of turning tirades into a kind of literary art. And he did have the gift of the gab, and he was extraordinarily offensive to people personally. The Muslims were by no means the only ones to bear the brunt of that. And in fact, he was more abusive to Jews, whom he accused of being hypocritical, of using the past, past suffering for their own ends and that kind of thing, and was very, very nasty indeed.
My guest is Ian Buruma. His new book, Murder in Amsterdam, is about the 2004 murder of the Dutch filmmaker Theo van Gogh by a Moroccan Dutchman who thought van Gogh's film insulted the Prophet Muhammad. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is journalist Ian Buruma. His new book is called Murder in Amsterdam, The Death of Theo van Gogh and the Limits of Tolerance. No, you grew up in the Netherlands. You're Dutch by birth and lived there from 1951 until 75, and now you live mostly in the United States. What are some of the differences in the way you think the United States has been handling questions about extremist Muslims in the United States and the way the Netherlands has been handling it? And I'll preface this by saying that the United States has always been a nation of immigrants. It's always been a multicultural country in that respect.
That is correct. Of course, the problem is not quite the same. The United States has many immigrant communities, but the Muslims are not as dominant here as they are in Europe and in Holland in particular. In Amsterdam alone, almost 50% of the population is foreign-born or has foreign-born parents. And of that number, the majority is Muslim. So they stand out much more than they do in the United States. And so far, the United States doesn't really have a problem of Muslim extremism, partly because perhaps the Middle Eastern minority in the United States is largely middle class and quite well integrated. Now, the question has been raised often why minorities seem to be more integrated in the more quickly integrated in the United States than they are in Europe. And various answers have been given. One of them may be the nature of the welfare state in Europe, which means that immigrants, poor people, are much more dependent on the state and on handouts from the state than they are in the United States, which has a harsher system where you're forced to work, even if it's just to flip hamburgers, just to survive. But it does have the effect, perhaps, of integrating people faster into the society than is true in Europe. I mean, it's not for nothing that a figure like Mohamed Bouyeri, that his dealings with mainstream Dutch society outside his own Moroccan community were almost exclusively with government officials, with welfare officers, with people in charge of donations or money of one kind or another. And so this leads to a humiliating sense of dependency and a kind of anger when you don't get what you want from official sources.
I think one of the things you try to do in this book is to see the story from the eyes of the Dutch and of Muslims trying to understand each other. You know, you point out that Amsterdam, for instance, has the red light district, and how really extreme that must seem to a lot of Muslim immigrants.
Yes, I think it inevitably it does. I mean, it's much more in your face than it is even around Times Square, certainly in the modern Times Square in New York. So yes, I'm sure it is very offensive. That's not an argument, perhaps, to change Dutch society. I mean, if people want to live there and move there, they'll have to get used to it. You're quite right in that I tried to write it in such a way that one is left with an understanding of the way many people in Holland see it from the mainstream. But also, I tried to look at it through the eyes of the Muslims, and this, of course, annoys some people because they feel you have to sort of pick sides and show, you know, whose side you're on. And I think this is one of the great dangers in Europe at the moment, and that's come from these dramatic events. It's this notion that it is two civilizations that are clashing and you have to sort of stand up for one or the other, whereas I think that's very simplistic, and we need the support of the moderate Muslims if the violent revolutionary element is to be isolated.
You say it's not possible to really understand what's going on in the Netherlands now without understanding the Netherlands' place in World War II and the story of Anne Frank, and how that figures into popular memory.
Well, the World War II is like a shadow that sort of is cast over every contemporary debate on minorities and tolerance and religion. On the one hand, the social democrat elites that are now blamed for what is seen as the failure of multiculturalism. One failure is that they never allowed the issue to be discussed, and that was out of fear that yet again a minority was going to be targeted. During World War II, the Dutch didn't do enough, perhaps, to stop the Germans from deporting three-quarters of the Jewish population in Holland, few of whom ever came back. And this is a source of great guilt. And so a good social democrat until recently would not talk about minority issues.
Since you live in the United States now, but grew up in the Netherlands, I'm wondering if writing this book has changed your impressions, your understanding of issues in the United States pertaining to multiculturalism.
Well, I think it's the one. I mean, at the moment, of course, the United States has a very bad press all over the world, and for some very good reasons. But I think one thing has gone better here than it is in Europe. I think the Europeans can learn from the way that the Americans do manage to absorb large numbers of immigrants and absorb them successfully. And why this should be an easier process in the United States than in Europe is not so simple. I mean, one of the reasons may be because of the nature of the welfare state in Europe. Here you have to fight for yourself or you sink. You can't afford to be dependent on the state. The other thing may be, which is particularly painful for Europeans, is the nature of national identity and nationalism. In Europe since the war, any overt sign of patriotism, waving flags and pledging allegiance and any kind of admiration for the military and that kind of thing, is on the whole taboo, except in football stadiums and except in Britain, where the army is still highly thought of. And it's precisely the hand on the heart and the flag waving and so on that maybe allows immigrants in America to identify with something tangible. Whereas when people say in a country like Holland they have to assimilate, it's not always clear to what they should assimilate. It's not clear what exactly it is about Holland that they should become or aspire to.
You had already read newspaper accounts of the murder of Theo van Gogh before you went to Holland to research the story for yourself. Was there any fundamental change in your understanding of the story after having done a lot of research about the people involved in the story?
Yes. For me, the greatest surprise, and in a way, it also gave me hope, was the enormous diversity amongst young Muslims, and that you cannot jump to conclusions just by looking at the way people dress, for example. And you'll find women in headscarves or even in dressed in black from head to toe who will vote for the Social Democrats and are very broad-minded. And so fundamental or neo-orthodox religion, which in the case of young Muslims is a bit like evangelical Christianity, they're born again mostly, their parents aren't usually that religious, is not the same as being attracted to revolutionary Islam and acts of terror. I mean, there is enormous diversity there. And I find it the most stimulating thing for me researching the book was really talking to the mostly Moroccan Dutch people. You meet people who are sort of almost crazy and say crazy, have crazy notions, but you meet people who are very sensible too. And it had very little to do really with the degree to which they were religious.
Ian Baruma, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Ian Baruma is the author of the new book Murder in Amsterdam, The Death of Theo van Gogh and the Limits of Tolerance. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.